Hello, welcome to the next episode of In Bed with Books. Today we are going to be talking to author Mae Corland, the author of the latest book, Five Broken Blades. Hello, Mae, can you introduce yourself a little bit?
Hi there. I'm Mae Corland. I have a new fantasy trilogy, which you just said was Five Broken Blades. Before this, I was writing children's literature. I've written The Jasmine Project, Everyone Hates Kelsey Miller, and contributed on You're Here. But it's been amazing to switch into new adult with Red Town.
That's awesome. All right. Can you tell me a little bit about that transition?
So I did want to, my first love was actually adult romance,
All
kind of
right.
sneaking Nora Roberts books around. So originally when I had first signed with an agent, it was to do adult contemporary romance. But at the time, this was a while ago, diverse adult was not really selling. So the YA space was really more welcoming, more open. So we went there first. But we had originally tried adult contemporary romance and domestic suspense. And I think you can kind of like feel those like threads in Five Broken
Yes.
Blades. But those were my first books, yeah.
Well, that's awesome. I should have definitely looked that up, but I had no idea. I mean, it sucks that you couldn't immediately go into what you were signed for because of the market at the time.
Yeah, it was a different place. The We Need Diverse Books movement hadn't started at that point or was just kind of getting off the ground, and it hadn't branched into adult yet. So it was a different place.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I do want to talk a little bit. You kind of touched on it there for a second, but your history with reading itself. So, at what age were you sneaking these Nora Roberts books?
It like being a child of like, so I grew up in like the late 80s, early 90s, and like, the parental supervision part of it was not quite what it is now with tracking your kids on your phone all the time. So I definitely read, I feel like everyone reads either like Stephen King, Anne Rice, or Nora Roberts like way too early. So which I think I hit all three, to be honest with you. I think I read Firestarter, Interview with a Vampire, and I can't even remember the title, one of the Nora Roberts books, probably around 13, 14.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Nice.
But my dad was a librarian, so my love of books started very early. I think probably Good Night Moon is the first one I remember reading.
Oh wow. Nice. Yeah, I'm on there with you in the should have been reading these books at this age train. No, but that's so did you spend a lot of time at the library?
Well, unfortunately, he passed away when I was young.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
That's okay. But I did, and then I went into like a little spell where I really wasn't reading very much, but I kind of rekindled my love of books around 13, 14. So that was around the time when I was diving into Stephen King and
Just skipped right past all of the YA. Yeah, just
well, at that time, there wasn't a lot of it. Like there was like The Outsiders, and which I didn't like at the time. So there wasn't a lot of it. It was a different time period.
Yeah, for sure. So then what drew you? Like, I guess one of my questions here is like what helps you choose a book or how do you decide on a book to read? So what drew you to those books initially?
Well, back then, I'm not really sure. Now it's more, I see friends of mine say, oh, you have to read this. And I will go in not knowing a thing about it. Like, I will open the book and I'll be like, oh, this is a fantasy, or like, oh, this is a thriller. Like, I literally know that little about it. My friend has just said it's really good. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I have to pick it up then. So, but I kind of like that. I kind of like not knowing what it's going to be when I open up, because it's always a surprise.
I love that. I feel like more readers need friends like you because I always feel like when I'm trying to sell a book to my friend, I'm like a first-time salesman and I'm just like, but it has everything you could want.
Yeah, meanwhile, I'm just like, yep, sign me up, let's go.
So do you read a lot of books then? Do you just shoot through them
I
or like
do.
nice.
I do. I can't, so I can't read while I'm drafting, which drives me wild because I really would like to be able to do that, but I feel like my style will be impacted by what I'm reading. So it'll start drifting away from, especially voice-wise, it'll start drifting away from what I want to tell. So I have to finish with what I'm doing. And so I have, it's kind of strange, right? Like you sit there all day working on a book and you're like, oh man, I can't wait to read these other books that I didn't write once I'm done. So actually right now I have Mirrored Heavens, which is the last book in the Black Sun trilogy. I just started reading that one and I love it. Black Sun's one of the best books that I've ever read. So I'm very excited, but also like hesitant to see this trilogy end. Like I feel like that's what happens when you really love a series. I have The Familiar by Leigh Bardugo, and I have Karen McManus's Such Charming Liars waiting for me. So I am slowly starting to make my way through those.
Nice. So how do you then well, first a compliment. I feel like I want to just jump into the writing, like your writing practice and everything now, because you had mentioned not like being like concerned about losing the voice that you are using when you're reading the and that is then like the biggest plus I've got, I should positive plus, however you want to put it, that I've got for your book, because you've got these different points of views. And they're kind of they kind of like grow as the book goes on, but they're so beautifully distinct.
Thank you.
It's, yeah, so I mean, I was gonna ask too, is like, is that something you're conscious of? But obviously it is going into this. So was that something that you intended from the beginning, or was that something more that like as the story grew, you realized was gonna be necessary?
It was definitely so originally when I had sold my editor on this story, it was only supposed to be three points of view. And when I handed it in, I'm like, oh, okay, so by the way, it's six. But it really, in order to tell the story properly of these five blades, these five different really liars and killers, and then a sixth. If I was leaving out points of view, I don't think the story would have been as well-rounded. I think it would have been probably more obvious as to who was, the master of lies, as they put it. Because I think you would naturally, as a reader, say, oh, well, we're not hearing from these two. It's probably one of them, or whatever the case may be. So it definitely grew over as I was drafting the book. And I liked it, but it's not easy to keep six characters unique. So you have to come up with unique slang, unique ways that they're going to see the world. Like Royo's cadence is different from Yoon's because they come from very different backgrounds, and you have to remain cognizant of that. And as you edit, that's what you're looking for to make sure that the voice doesn't slip.
Excellent job, like honestly. I feel like getting the multiple points of view is kind of like in vogue right now. And I've definitely seen or read books that don't nail it quite as perfectly as you did in this book. So props to you, honestly.
Thank you.
And I would describe myself as a paranoid reader, like one too many unreliable narrators. So going into this, knowing that one of them or multiple of them were like lying, half of my notes in this are just trying to dissect everybody's, because you really expertly reveal like each of their motivations and kind of like the secrets along the way in a way that keeps it really engaging between chapters. And it really, really built up in a way that was like the payoff was really, really excellent. But that's
Thank
all I'll
you.
say on that because the book isn't out yet. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. So, can you tell me then a little bit about some of the influences that you had coming into this story and into like creating this world and these characters?
Sure. So what I wanted to do for the characters, the first character that I'd actually come up with was Sora. This idea of a poison maiden and how somebody would become a poison maiden and the impact that would have, but also why. Like, what's going on in this world that somebody like this would be necessary? Like, who would they need to be killing discreetly? What is going on? What kind of power imbalance would create this type of girl? But also, what would the scars be from going through this? Like, obviously you can't be, and one of the lines in the book is like, you can't be forged into a blade without losing a lot of yourself. So it actually had started with her. And then we kind of built up around her as to like, well, who would she want to kill and why? And then why would it be so difficult? And then who else would she need around her? The first point of view is Royo, who is muscle for hire or a strong man, which is kind of just a term that I created for Five Blades. It's muscle for hire. I liked this idea that they are in sort of a kind of pan-Asian, pan like global society, that it is definitely based on some real history with Korea, some real historical fact is at play in the book. But I kind of like this idea of them all being like vaguely Asian. Because I never saw anybody who looked like me in anything that I read. And I definitely wanted to have, but I'm not like, so I'm adopted. I grew up in New York in the United States, but I was born and spent, the first almost year of my life in Seoul. So I'm Korean, but I am also American. And I wanted to have like that East meets West.
Yes, yeah. And I can see that like it fully comes through in this. So well done.
Thank you. Like,
Yeah.
Tamnaeki is really Atlantis. Like, that is the inspiration for that city. Meanwhile, the overall flavor, I guess, of Yusan is more of a Pan-Asian place.
Awesome. So then in the like you kind of described there the beginning and like the roots of where this all came from. So then how did you what does your writing practice look like in establishing that and growing that?
So it starts with like a kernel of an idea, I guess. And actually my editor, Liz, played a huge role in developing both this book and the trilogy. So this was really more of a collaborative project than, well, Jasmine was IP, so that was a little bit different. But it's definitely certainly more collaborative than a normal book would be. Which was awesome. It was so great to be able to bounce ideas off of somebody and kind of like when I didn't have a direction or I was like, well, what about this? Do you think that this would work for the plot? It was so nice to be able to do that. As far as the actual drafting of the book goes, for me, it's about 2,000 words a day until it's done.
Ooh, nice. Okay.
Yep. Without usually with no breaks, although so I just drafted book two, and I had foolishly scheduled not fool well it was nice, but I had scheduled a vacation over spring break or February break, whatever that is, to take my kids down to Disney. And I was like, oh, this is gonna really throw off the schedule. But and there was a little bit where I was trying to write a Magic Kingdom, and then I was like, no, you know what? No, I'll be a week later than I thought I would be because you can't miss that. But yep, 2,000 words a day.
And do you just like sit down in the morning, or I guess is this your job? Do you have a day job?
No, this is my job.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm a full-time writer, which comes with, amazing blessings and amazing pressures, I guess. I think that that's the trade-off, right? Like you have this incredible dream job, but it's still a job. So you still have to like pay bills with it, and your mortgage company doesn't take like, I don't know, star reviews. It takes, book sales. So it's a little bit different. But it is certainly a blessing to be able to, if I need to be in my office for 10 hours writing, then I'm in my office for 10 hours writing. That's how I'm going to spend my Tuesday.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you just stick it like a 9 to 5, getting it
Oh
done.
no, not at all. I wish. So with right, writing is it's a fickle beast. I can sit at my desk from, I mean, I don't get up at 9, but I could sit at my desk for 8 hours and revise, because I think that's more of like a disciplined area of like, okay, page by page, here's your layout, and this is what you're going to make better about it today. And all that requires is really focused. That's more of the, I think more of the craft aspects is revision and making it better. But for drafting, that's more of the fickle muse part of it. Like you can't, it's very hard to bottle that, to say, okay, from 9 to 5, I'm going to be creative. Like it doesn't quite work that way. So what we try to do is, myself and a few other writers, we try to do writing sprints, which is like, and sometimes it's revision sprints too, but it is the most useful thing in the world. So you say to another writer, oh, hey, are you ready to go? And they'll be like, yes or no, I can't until like 1:15. So then, but then at 1:15, you both go, you start, you put your focus app or whatever on your phone, and for 15 minutes, you just focus on your writing. And what you do is you kind of, you say where you're starting. So I will say like 62,039 words. And then at the end of the 15 minutes, you report back with where you are at that point.
Nice.
And so it'll be go from like 62,039 words to 62,530 words. Meanwhile, I had spent like 2 hours just dicking around on my phone before that. So it's like it's that accountability buddy. Like it's just really important to have, because this is such a solitary process until it goes out on the shelves.
Yeah, for sure. And it's just, yeah, just chasing that muse, hoping that you can make that connection there. That's insane that you're still able to get out 2,000, like a goal, that's like a reasonable goal for you.
You know what? There are people though who will go and write 10,000 words in a day, and I'm like, I don't understand that at all.
Oh,
So
yeah.
it's definitely, I think those people outline though, and I don't. So that's another part of it.
Oh, okay. So you're a pantser.
I am the best part of writing for me is telling myself the story. It's surprising myself with where it goes and not having the constraint. Like there's a loose cage around it now, because like, it's a trilogy. You have to kind of vaguely stick within these constraints. But I love watching it wander. I love watching it become what it becomes. And I swear, I say that there's like a squirrel and two brain cells that are constantly working on this book kind of in the background. And then when I sit down at the keyboard, like these ideas are just there. And it's the best part to me. Like revision is work and it's great work, but this part of it where I'm just kind of letting the story kind of flow out and wander is my favorite part of writing.
And that's awesome because this is like, I would not have guessed you were a pantser. And I guess, again, that's the craft of revision and the editing process and everything. But this is just such a solidly, like, structured book in my view.
We had to move some chapters around.
Oh, that's, I
We
mean, that's
did.
fair. Yeah. But I would never have guessed that you were a pantser. And I'm an outliner, so respect, because if I go in without any idea of what I'm doing, like, there's just nothing that's gonna happen.
Well, we had to because it has always been laid out as three books. We have had like kind of the vaguer
Yeah.
structure around, okay, this is what needs to happen in this one, this is what needs to happen in this one, and this is how we're going to wrap everything up. There's still some like future May problems going on for book three, even now that book two is wrapped up. But I'm like, okay, well, that'll be for future me. Yeah, I wish I could outline. I think it would be so much more efficient, but that's where we're at this point. I think you would get to a certain point as a writer where whatever your process is your process. Like you could
Yeah.
make it a little more efficient, but you're never going to change it.
Yeah, and I also feel like there's merit to both ways. Like, one way or the other is just your way, like you said, of like making that connection with the muse. Like, you don't have to bottle it, you just find the vessel that she's cool with.
Absolutely.
All right, so then who or what kind of influenced your main characters? Do you find people like in your life or in the media that you were exploring at this point where you're like, okay, I could see where that made it in here?
So my partner definitely influenced Royo,
Oh,
which I
yeah.
love. I think it's not like he's not a strong man, but there are aspects of him that are similar, like more of really the build than anything else. But it's I loved getting this kind of grump sunshine in because it is like the reverse of our dynamic. Like he is like the golden retriever and I'm the black cat. So like it's hilarious to me to reverse that in a book. So for Sora, her personality was always like just this very gentle person who's been through a lot, but who's still trying to cling to her humanity, who still has this really like incredible depth of love, even despite everything she's been through. And I really liked getting into her motivations and like how she would still see the world. And then I loved the interplay between this like formerly spoiled prince and his spy master lover, who is like wry and funny and at least on the surface doesn't seem to take life too seriously, which is kind of the counterbalance to Yoon's paranoia. I liked having these foils within the group.
Yeah, and I think it really spices up each of their little stories up until they meet. Yeah, I love that. And I think Sora is probably my favorite character in this. And I say favorite loosely because there's moments throughout the whole book where, like, in the margins, I'm writing, never mind, he's my favorite, love him, never mind. Yeah. But I think there's just something so kind of like quintessential to like the experience as a woman to have these forces trying to harden you and trying to like chip away at parts of yourself and to still find space for that kindness and that gentleness that we meet when we're introduced to her. Yeah, and
Yeah,
I love that about
absolutely.
her. Yeah.
And then I loved writing Ari too, and like that bubbly voice that you don't typically get in darker fantasy because it doesn't usually fit. I loved I it just brought she brought a lot of levity to what would, and so did Mikhail, what would otherwise be a very heavy narrative.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. So then some of that heaviness is definitely from like the political systems that are at play in this and the way that it's affecting all of these people from like these different class, like the stratifications, I guess. So then how, because you're a lot of what you're exploring in the book is like this moral grayness between the characters. And then how did you approach that? Like, where did you, I guess, draw? Did you intend to draw a line? Did you try to? Were you conscious of it? How often, I guess, did you pull back?
I don't think I pulled back at all.
Nice.
Five Blades at its core is an exploration of power. What happens to the people with power, what happens to the people without it, what you would do to get it, what you would do to hold on to it. So I loved creating characters that are, you can make an argument that every single one is a bad person, but they all have like very, very strong reasons for doing what they do. I love kind of the flexible morality that comes into play with rooting for these people because objectively, they're all killers. Like they are all liars. They are all, in this particular instance, they're all traitors. It is, but it's extremely interesting, psychologically, I think, to then root for them, to then, be very actually attached to them and hope that they succeed in murdering somebody. I think that that's fascinating, like from a writer standpoint, but I also think it's fascinating from a reader standpoint. Like I love, like obsessed with the Netflix series You,
Yes,
and he's terrible, and you're like, oh man, I really hope he gets away with it. And you're like, what? Wait, what did I just say? Like, why am I hoping that he gets away with murder, like, or
Yes.
torturing somebody? Like, why am I hoping that he's gonna be okay and not get caught, or that he actually does get the girl, even though we might know he winds up killing the girl? Like what is this? But I love that, and I loved it in Talented Mr. Ripley too, where like you're hoping for this killer to get away with it. I think that that's a really fascinating exercise.
And I think you is actually like just such an excellent example as well, because it's also kind of playing with this class issue, which I don't think people always realize is influencing them. Because in the latest season, when he was going after all of those rich people in London, I was here for it. Like in the past seasons, I was like, you know, you're a little far now, but like, there was just not a point in the latest season where I was like, he's gone too far, because we see how terrible these people are and like in such an unrelatable way.
Yep. Oh, until the end. Until the end. You're like, oh, whoa, where'd that come from? But yes, the interplay of class was, to have a country that allows indentured servitude, created a very interesting, I think, backdrop to Five Broken Blades. If you have royalty, you have this like extremely powerful high nobility. And then you have the common people, but then below that you have indentured servitude and what that'll do. The striated class system does kind of harken back to ancient Korea, to the Joseon era. And then the Festival of Blood that happens in the book happened in real life.
Oh, wow.
That is actually a historical event that took place when Japan invaded Korea.
Oh,
One
wow.
of the times. There's been multiple, but one of the times.
That's intense. And
Yeah, absolutely.
I love that you've incorporated those parts as well, because it's if you want to explore these themes, then what better way than to force real situations into the story?
Yeah, there's a bit more of that in coming in the next book too, and then in the last.
Nice. I cannot wait for that. Let's see here. Okay, so then what, so going into this, and I think we talked about it with Sora a little bit, but what were some non-negotiables that you knew you had to put in the story? And not just in like the, well, I'm outlining for a trilogy sense, but like you knew that these were themes or events or archetypes that you knew you had to have in this.
So, I definitely knew that the book at its core is an exploration of power. So you needed the various iterations of that to all be present. Otherwise, I think you create kind of a lopsided story.
Yeah.
I definitely wanted like this kind of cross-cultural aspect to it, which because they have to travel the whole length of this country, of this kind of vast country, I wound up having to create way more cities than I had anticipated going into this. But like that's sort of the beauty. And then and now as we go into book two and book three, also creating, full realized realms has been interesting. It's been a really, really good exercise in saying, okay, well, what is this place like, and now how is it different from this next place that we're going? As far as non-negotiables, that was pretty much it. I wanted the characters to be diverse, and that was fully supported. I wanted
Nice.
to have a well, two things though. I wanted to have a world where sexuality didn't matter and skin color didn't matter. Like that these are not the things that are going to separate you out in this society. What separates you out in the society is fully class.
Nice. Okay.
So I wanted to it's almost casual diversity, I guess would be the term for it, where it's effortless. It's not the thing that's being explored is not the societal reaction to a gay couple. It's not the societal reaction to somebody being bi or pan or whatever. It is very simply based on where are you class-wise. So if your skin is darker or your skin is lighter, it doesn't matter in this book, or in this trilogy in general. I kind of wanted to eliminate that as those as factors, but have them present in the book.
Got it. Yeah. And I think one of my favorite ways that you're exploring that class as well is in Mikhail and Yuen. Yuen? Yuen. Because honestly, like at first, you really like him because he's like, you know, he's on the lam, he's had it really hard, but then you find out why he's been banished, and you're like, okay, actually, here, this isn't. And I think that's I say fun so loosely in this context, but just like it's fun in that, like, it really makes you question things, like the extent of your own kind of, I guess, class awareness in a way, but also just, I guess, forgiveness. Yeah, I love it. Okay. So, last two questions here. What is one piece of advice that you have for people looking to publish their work?
Read
Nice. Love it.
a lot. Read in your genre, read outside of your genre. There's three different reasons for this. The first is well, four, I suppose. First is that it's just fun. Second is that you should know what and read things that are recent. You should know what the landscape looks like for the thing that you want to publish. The third is to have, because inspiration can come from anything. Like you can read, you could be writing middle grade, and you can read something in Gothic, horror, an adult, but say, oh, I want to bring a piece of that into the story, even though it's middle grade. Like it doesn't necessarily have to be the whole thing being imported, but like this atmospheric tension, I want to bring that into middle grade. You know, so everything that you watch, everything that you consume, affects who you are as a storyteller. And then when did I, was that three or four? I don't know. But reading will benefit you incredibly because it also helps you hone your voice and see where a voice is at if you're reading things from the last 3 years or so. And plus, you should be able to answer questions like, what is your favorite book? And not, you know, yes, Jane Eyre can be your favorite book, and that's totally fine, but you should also be aware of what's being published, like within your genre that you want to be.
I love that.
Plus,
I think
it's the cheapest way to learn how to write, honestly.
yes. And if you get stuff from the libraries, it's free.
Right. It's totally, you know, it is the, you know, there's two types of reading. There's the reading for just enjoyment, and there's the reading for how did they do that? And so you have both available to you, and it's amazing. And yeah, libraries are free. It's great.
All right. So then I realize book one's not even out yet. So
No.
if there's anything further you're able to say about what we can expect moving forward, and it could just be, you know, a trilogy. That's what we're expecting.
I mean, yes, it's a trilogy. The world of the book is going to be expanding. We're going to be going new places to do new things. Power is going to be shifting. Let's see, what else can I say? I mean, will all the main characters make it out of this trilogy alive? Probably not.
I hope not. And not in a bad way, but in a like, I love reading for pain kind of way.
I mean it's unlikely, right? Like there's six of
Yeah.
them. It's unlikely that everybody makes it out of this trilogy alive. So that's all I'll say for that though.
Six killers. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean it's unlikely. I mean it could happen, but unlikely.
All right. I love that. I love going into books being more paranoid.
You're like, oh no, now it happens in the next one.
Well, I cannot wait to find out. So, is there any final points that you want to touch on before we close out here?
No, this was great.
Yeah, I had a great time talking with you. You are welcome on any time you're releasing a new
Thank you so
book.
much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you for joining me for another episode of In Bed with Books, a bookish podcast for bookish babes. Make sure to like and subscribe so you can keep up with all of the latest updates. And if you have any suggestions for authors, books, or topics that you want to hear about on the podcast, then feel free to DM me on Instagram or shoot me an email. I'm wishing you a lovely rest of your day, and until next time, happy reading.